This week and next week in the lead up to Australia Day on the 26th, I've been inviting a range of Australian thinkers and more onto this radio station to address the idea of what it means to be Australian. Are we genuinely any different? You often hear these sort of parochial phrases, you know, we're Aussies, and we're somehow different. I wanted to know if there really is something about being Australian that's genuinely different from any other sort of European background nation. I've asked a range of people. This morning, my first politician, not a terribly high-profile politician, but one that I think is a bit of a thinker. His name is Andrew Leigh. You might have heard me interview Andrew last year when he brought out a book, Battlers and Billionaires, The Story of Inequality in Australia, and there's a couple of real revelations in there for me. He also brought out a book some time ago called Disconnected, which was a look at sort of the fractured nature of modern life in Australia. And Andrew, as someone who has both a sociological background from Harvard and an economics background, and is now an Australian politician, he approached it what I thought was a different way for a Labor MP. He's the Labor member for Fraser in the Australian Capital Territory. Andrew Fraser, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
Very well, Andrew. Now, all right, here we go. What does it mean to be Australian, Andrew Leigh?
Well, Steve, the story that I think best sums up the character of Australians comes after the Bali bombings in 2002, when the doctor on duty in what they called the Australian ward in Bali, Graham Southwick, was going bed to bed, and he kept on being told by everyone who he asked if they needed painkillers, "No, I'm doing all right, but the person in the next bed is suffering more than me." And when he read this story, one of our great historians, John Hirst, was reminded of a tale from World War One, in which the account from our great war historian, Charles Dean, said that as he went bed to bed, the lightly hurt always said, "No, no, no, it's the bloke in the next bed that needs the drugs more than me." So for me, it's that value of looking after one another, of looking after our mates, that really characterises what it is to be Australian. You see it in those tales from World War II as well, the POW camps run by people like Weary Dunlop, where they banded together and came out alive in a way that the Americans and the British were just unable to.
Are you, in my mind, that's sort of like a selflessness, but it's only a selflessness that comes out in times of pressure or tragedy. Who are we the 99% of the time?
I think there is a sense in which what you do under stress says a lot about your character.
Okay, yeah, fair point.
But you're right that it is sometimes put at risk. And the Australia that I look to is one that has three core values, and they are egalitarianism and mateship and the fair go. And for each of those values, we're constantly updating them for our own age. Egalitarianism used to be white male egalitarianism, and now it's much more inclusive. And mateship needs to recognise that, you know, one of the great moments of mateship isn't just blokes going to the footy. It's that moment when Gough Whitlam pours the sand into the hands of Vincent Lingiari as he hands the land back, and Lingiari says, "We're all mates now." And the fair go has to be not just about a fair go for a few, but a fair go that recognises that racism is un-Australian, and that people's sexual preference is their own business, and bigotry and homophobia are un-Australian as well.
Are we a culture that has been swamped as a result of the globalisation process? Has our culture been able to resist this at all? Many cultures have not. In fact, that's sometimes a lament of Indigenous Australians, that they were swamped, Indigenous tribes were swamped by European culture. Well, has modern Australia been able to resist at all the globalisation process?
Well, Steve, I think the way in which you're able to deal with changes to your society, whether that's, you know, changes in technologies or changes in migration, is by having a national character that's grounded in values rather than in stereotypes. So if what it is to be an Australian is it's to drive a Holden and eat meat pies and drink VB, if it's that sort of bush stereotype of, you know, the Heidelberg School or Banjo Patterson, then it's pretty fragile basis on which to ground a nation. But if it's grounded in values, you know, whether they're the three that I mentioned of egalitarianism and mateship and the fair go, or other values that other people hold dear to, then you can bring newcomers into your midst by saying, welcome, these are the values that that we believe in here.
Considering your views, then, who formed us? Who formed our culture? To, you know, writers and thinkers over the eons, guys like, say, recently, let's choose poet T.S. Eliot, thought that religion was the absolute pivot point which formed cultures, any culture. Who do you think formed us or our Australian culture?
I think there's a number of national experiences that form us. Certainly the Eureka Stockade is absolutely vital as a touchstone in the mid-19th century for not wanting oppressive taxation, for a belief.
That was just a tax protest, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a bunch of things. So it's certainly a protest against oppressive taxation, the idea that you should have to pay just as much for a mining licence if you find nothing as if you strike it lucky. But in the Eureka Stockade, they're also talking about republicanism, about the importance of standing up for on their own seat rather than being dominated by Britain. And they're talking, too, about multiculturalism. So while Eureka excludes the Chinese, it includes the Irish, the Greeks, the Italians, the Croatians. There's so many cultures represented there at Eureka. And it's used as a touchstone not just for extending universal male franchise, but then for Australia being the first country in the world that not only allowed women to vote, but also to stand for office. And so in that sense, became the world's first democracy.
My guest is Andrew Lee. Andrew is a federal Labor Member of Parliament. He's the member for Fraser in Canberra. This is 612 ABC Brisbane. Steve Austin's my name. You'd know some of the look or the re-look at the national curriculum. One of the issues that's come up is as the sort of the expunging or the ignoring or the blotting out of the involvement of sort of Judeo-Christian values in forming institutions and Australia as a nation around the time of Federation. Do you have a view on this? How much was Australia formed by Judeo-Christian values?
Well, there's certainly those Judeo-Christian principles. I mean, the notion of doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you is I think, very much at the core of mateship, that sort of ethic of care, if you like. But we're now in Australia in which the fastest growing religion is Buddhism, and in which many Australians are agnostic or atheists. And so it's important to recognise that plurality, and that the values that characterise Australia are deeper than any particular ethnicity or any particular religion. You know, there's things that you notice. If you go away from Australia for a little while, and I studied in the US for 4 years. You come back and you sit in the front seat of the taxi, not in the back seat of the taxi. You call everyone mate. Many of us don't tip because we prefer to pay people decent wages. And, you know, if there's another country that's had central bank governors called Nugget and Nobby, then I'd like to know about it. There's that sense of informality about Australia, and that's something that I think is really important to our sense of national identity.
Our parliamentary system is a blend of the United Kingdom and the United States. But not the same. You know, it's a deliberate picking of the eye teeth out of both of those in a parliamentary sense. Have we done anything similar at a cultural level or at a sociological level? I know you looked a lot at sociological factors around Australia.
Well, I think our sport is to a large extent infused by sort of what I would think of more as kind of British values. Particularly
the British invented something like 80% of the games in the world today, so
it's true.
It's hard to avoid that.
That little cold little island off the coast of Europe does account for a few things.
Yeah.
And that sense of fair play in cricket, I think, is an important one as well. The thing that I worry about is that while you know, there's a lot to admire about the US, and I'm married to someone who was born in the US, I think there is a risk that some of our social norms are shifting that way. The rise in inequality that, for example, we've seen over the last generation, doubling of the income share of the top 1%, and the sort of stratospheric increase in CEO salaries, significantly outpacing average worker salaries, that I worry about a little bit. And you know, you've seen that in Britain as well, but not to the same marked extent. You know, the rise in the number of private planes, number of private helicopters, the desire for carved out private space, whether it's gated estates or whether it's having access to private doctors and private schools. You know, I worry that can go too far down the road of splitting us into two Australias, a group which basically relies on private services and a residualised rump that uses the government services.
Is there any point in trying to resist, this is my phrase, I don't know if it's appropriate, but cultural colonialisation from those dominant global cultures?
We'll always be a melting pot, I think, and we will always be influenced by the US, you know, partly because we watch more American movies than movies from any other country. But we're different, and look, I'll just give you two examples of that. The first is the way in which Sydneysiders responded when there were those terrible fires in the early 2000s, and Los Angelinos responded to the earthquake. In Los Angeles, there were tent cities. In Sydney, people took neighbours into their homes. Sydneysiders, I think, would have thought it was abhorrent to have people living in a tent city. And you see it in our military too. I mean, our military is much more likely to be out on foot patrols chatting to locals rather than sitting back hiding behind sandbags. And I think that's why our troops have done such a terrific job, say, in East Timor and the Solomon Islands, because we go out and we engage with the locals. That notion of mateship drives us to have an army that wants to hear from the common person on the street, not sit behind sandbags and just chat to tribal leaders.
Andrew Lee, really appreciate that. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Steve, and to you and your listeners.
Federal Labor Member of Parliament Andrew Lee, who's the ALP member for Fraser in the Australian Capital Territory. I'll put the interview with Andrew on my website later on for you to listen back if you'd like it. For listeners in South East Queensland, more on what it means to be Australian next week.